Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Of all the lips I know I've kissed, I can recall just two.
From newsounds.org and the studios of WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck, our series of live performances and interviews. I'm John Schaefer. You may know singer Rachel Price from the hit band Lake Street Dive. Vilry is a guitarist, songwriter, and singer based here in New York, and together, Rachel and Vilry have just released their second album as a duo. It's called I Love a Love Song, and on first listen, it may sound like something that actually came out 80 or 90 years ago. The duo draws on, and in their own sly way, extends the tradition of the great American songbook. And they've joined us today to play a few of their new, old-sounding songs. Here's Rachel and Vilry with Is a Good Man Real?
I've never known one. What do they do? We've all heard the legends, but can they be true? My cousin's best friend's boyfriend once nearly cooked a meal. So is a good man real? Does he try to remember what his old lady said when he sleeps and on Tuesdays does he straighten the bed? Once he's had three martinis, he'll let you take the wheel. Oh, is a good man real? I've never seen a narwhal, the unicorn of the sea, but if God made whales and put horns on the males, maybe he'd put a heart in a guy for me. He don't need money. I said good, not perfect. I'll settle for honey and a quarterly date. So if you see this treasure, please let them know how I feel. I hope a good man's real. God made whales and put horns on the males. Maybe he'd put a heart in a guy for me. He don't need money. I'll settle for funny. So if you see this sucker, please let him know how I feel. Is a
live performance of Is a Good Man Real? That is a track from the latest album by Rachel and Villery called I Love a Love Song, on which both Rachel Price and Villery sing, and Villery playing the guitar as well. It's been a while since we were all together for a very different sort of event some years ago. It's great to have the two of you here today.
Lovely to be here.
That's great.
So Villery, it's a lovely song, but it has a slightly cynical streak to it.
Yeah, totally. It's part of a tradition.
Well, you know, that's a funny thing because, you know, when we think of songs from that time, the radio age, so-called, we think of them as these really, I don't know, earnest songs. Where do you hear that kind of subversively cynical streak in these old tunes?
Well, I'll have a panic attack if I try to think of a specific song right now. But it's what I love about this music is that it's incredibly literate.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of like vernacular and trying to capture like the language and feelings of people on the street. It's a very populist kind of music, and as such, it can kind of express all these sort of operatic lows and highs and funny things. And, you know, people contain multitudes, and this is like the music of the theater originally. So yeah. It's a great opportunity to express all sorts of things.
Yeah, and in this case, Rachel, your character clearly has been hanging out with the wrong kind of men.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny almost to think of it as cynical versus the notion of songs from this era being maybe more earnest, because it's very possible that if this song did exist, it would have come across as completely earnest, because it would have been a very worthwhile question to ask, is a good man real? Because this many years later, it's still a worthwhile question to ask. And, you know, I mean, I always think about the song, Oh My Man, I Love Him So, which Ruth Etting sang. It was a huge hit. And, you know, the lead-in to the form of the song is, he beats me to what can I do? And this was a hit at the time. So the people weren't unfamiliar shying away from certain subjects. So I think it's kind of interesting. I think this song comes across as more sarcastic now, like, oh, once he's had three martinis. But I can see, a woman in the 30s nodding along and being like, yeah, I wonder if he will let me take the wheel once he's had three martinis.
Yeah. And then, of course, in the 60s, he hit me and it felt like a kiss.
Yes, you know? Exactly. I mean, yes.
So how did the two of you first begin kind of mining this sonic area together?
Really kind of right away. Rachel and I have been playing together, I think it's 2016. We're coming up on our anniversary, but we've known each other for many years before that. I think we prioritize songs in this a creative pursuit. We love love songs, and we love the purity of this era, and I think that there's just like it can be interpreted so many different ways, and that's kind of how you know a good song.
So it's up to 9 pieces on
yeah,
the record.
Exactly.
So is there something formally different from those old songs, from the way songs are done today? I mean, is there a structural thing, or are there certain chord progressions? What do you hear then that you don't hear now?
I'm not sure. I think music is music on some level. And if you sat down and you sort of pulled apart the pieces of a pop song today, you know, you would find interesting structures and things to catch the ear and catch the mind as a composer. I can only speak to what obsesses me, which is kind of words that feel good to sing. That's what I value when I listen to a Johnny Mercer song or I listen to a Peggy Lee song. It's kind of the lyrics feel great in a way that, you know, some of the Tin Pan Alley musical writers, while great, I feel like sometimes they're after sort of meaning and thematic bigness. And there's a certain sort of aesthetic that I really like about the word choices and the way they flow and how they like inform the swing and the feel of the song. So, you know, that's I'm not really answering your question, but I prioritize certain things, and I think everybody who writes music has their own priorities in mind. And as long as you're being true to your priorities and what interests you about writing, I think that that's the universal strength of songwriting.
Yeah. Rachel, you do most of the heavy lifting vocally. so are these fun to say? I mean, do the words, do they feel good coming out?
They really do. They feel good. What Villery was saying about the words sort of having an inherent rhythmic swing to them, I think he really favors those words. I was thinking, what was the song I was thinking about where you chose a time, and I was like, why would he have chosen that time? I was like, oh, right, December 18th. We have a song that starts with a it's like a little intro. It's our Christmas tune. It's December 18th and Ain't He Sweet. And I was like, I wonder if anyone wonders why that date. And I was like, oh, he chose 18th. And I went through all the numbers and I was like, December 15th. I was like, no, 18th is the nicest to sing. And I know that Villery's sort of going through those. He's getting to a word and he's just kind of going through all the possibilities. And he's choosing the one that sounds nicest and swings the hardest.
Is it hard, Villery, writing new songs in an old style without, you know, dipping into like send-up or satire?
I don't think it's hard. I think you just have to be sort of true to your own tastes. And the truer you are to your own tastes, the more your own voice kind of comes across.
Yeah. So there is kind of an authenticity to these songs that is kind of adrift in time. They are not authentic songs from the radio age.
Yeah.
But they also don't sound like anything else being written in 2023. So, well done. The album is called I Love a Love Song, the second from the duo of Rachel and Villery. The next title is Hate is the Basis of Love. And, you know, love songs at their best acknowledge that love's a complicated thing, right?
Totally. Yeah, I mean, this song, I actually wrote it as a commission for a couple, and a young lady sent me an email, and she said that she and her partner connect deeply on all things, as you would with somebody that you love, but they really figured it out because they hate the same things, and so they're kind of safe from those things in each other's arms, and I couldn't think of the song that was about that. And so that's already a great starting point. And then I was kind of thinking about, you know, Nat King Cole, who had a song in the 40s called Gone with the Draft, which is like a shocking song. It's a song about a guy with flat feet who gets to stay home from World War II.
Right.
And clean up with the ladies. and it's like very humorous, but it's not mean-spirited. It's just he's happy. And yeah. And I mean, it's a little mean-spirited. He's like singing about how they're like got packs on their backs and he's like cleaning up with the ladies.
When the boys get back and see how I'm doing, they'll be sorry they left, 'cause one can't keep on wooing and still be gone with the dread.
Somebody said when we were turning in this record, they were like, well, you know, I don't think in the 40s you would hear a song called Hate is the Basis of Love. But my basic feeling is that with Gone with the Draft, you have permission to write about anything. Because if that was on the radio while World War II is going on, then anything is fair game.
Yeah, a very, very problematic moral or ethical
I know,
background.
But Nat King Cole, it's like ask for a better voice to put that across and be like, yeah, this is fine.
All right, well, let's hear this live performance here in our studio. The song is called Hate is the Basis of Love. You'll find it on the new record by Rachel and Villery.
People long to find true love. They're searching every day. They wonder at the mystery of the fire that never burns away. Perhaps they say the spark that sets it springs from the things lovers like. On your first date, I advocate that you focus on all the many things you both hate.
One, two, three, four.
Hate is the basis of love.
Despising is the wise thing. For seeing if you see things eye to eye.
Imagine hating raisins. Now everything has raisins. Cause you fell for a raisin crazy fool.
And in your shared apartment, there lives a purple carpet. Cause guess what? Mr. Raisin loves that too.
And every hat he wears is apt to irritate.
Cause every hat he owns is a hat you hate.
If only you'd been straighter, said, honey, I'm a hater. If you wanna know what floats my boat, then ask what gets my goat.
Cause hate is the basis of love.
Hate is the basis of love. Detesting's the best thing. Detesting's the best thing
for knowing if you're going all the way. Oh, baby, I hate tourists. The smug, the wrong, the purists.
Mushrooms, melons, licorice as well.
But when I come back home, I'm safe from all of them.
Cause my sweetheart wants even less to do with them.
She pets me and she praises, she scratches every itch. But when she wants to win my heart, she listens while I bitch.
Cause hate is the basis. Hate is the basis. Hate is the basis. Hate is the basis of love.
Rachel and Villery live with Hate is the Basis of Love. I was careful in introducing the two of you to say that on first listen, the songs on the new album might sound like the 30s or 40s. But, you know, just even a cursory listen to some of the lyrics on that song kind of gives the game away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it would have passed the muster before... you know, the codes came in. You know? There's a lot of blues songs with curses and...
That's true.
And, yeah. You know.
And serious sexual
serious
innuendo.
Serious sexual energy.
Yeah. So taking a listen to this album, you know, we have a lot of... This radio station's been around forever. We have a lot of old 1940s ribbon microphones that we trot out occasionally for, like, old-timey brass bands and stuff. You have brought one of those into the studio. So how much do you go into the actual old production techniques in making these records?
Well, this recent one, certainly, I mean, I can't get into the nitty-gritty of it because I just don't know, but we went into a big old room and we recorded live, certainly the backing tracks, the instrumental tracks. Rachel was in a booth, but otherwise we were all together capturing the humanity of each player and the feeling in the room and the sort of liveness of it, and you know, it's a snapshot in time in a way that, you know, many modern records aren't, because you want to have all that control and right. You want to isolate everything. So yeah, there's a lot of bleed between microphones on this record, and it all contributes to the sound of feeling like you're in the room. You know, and that's the sound that I love from a 50s record, is like really intimate vocal sound, pretty dry, but certainly very much like whispering in your ear kind of thing. And then the band sounds like it's kind of a little bit over there.
Right.
And you know, just it sort of highlights, lifts the song itself to sort of a sublime level.
Well, songs like Just Two or Even in the Evening, you know, even in the evening, starts with the sound of the horns. And they sound just the way you would expect horns to have sounded in 1939, you know?
I mean, that part of it is Jacob Zimmerman, who wrote the arrangements. He's a total magician and completely fluent in the language of this stuff. And he understands from hearing a song. We talk about it to some extent, but really I hand in a song and say, well, do what you're going to do, because I really trust him. And with good reason. All these, he's never handed back an arrangement where I was like, I don't think you really got it. And sometimes my references aren't his, and that's a little bit of the magic of it. We were recording Even in the Evening, and I was like, this sounds like a Kenyon Hopkins, like, you know, sort of horn arrangement, the way the Hustler sounds. Kenyon Hopkins wrote the music for the Hustler, the great Paul Newman movie, and it's just got this incredibly sexy saxophone stuff going on.
Ain't so grim. I guess I see him.
He said that he was thinking of Billy Strayhorn. So, you know, it's like Kenyon Hopkins was probably listening to Billy Strayhorn.
Yeah, yeah.
I know Kenyon Hopkins maybe a little, you know, I know the Hustler maybe more than I know whatever record Jacob was listening to. But that's kind of the magic of it, is everybody sort of speaks the language of this history, and you can kind of bring it in and bring it back to life, as long as the song is authentic to some element of it.
Yeah. Rachel, how much of this do you need or even want to know before you start singing along?
I like to hear Villeray's references, the singer that he may have had in mind while he was writing the song. Certainly,
well,
early
presumably
on.
Presumably you.
Yeah. Yes.
More and more lately.
More and more me.
When we first
yeah.
got started, not so much.
Yeah. When we first started out, it was like, oh, I wrote this song for Billie Holiday, or I wrote this song for Peggy Lee, and they're dead, so could you do your best? And that was extremely helpful for me to hear a song in sort of the context that he was hearing it initially, and then grow it from there. And now I do think you have my voice in mind, but of course you know who my references are. You know that I'm calling on Doris Day and Dinah Shore and Ella Fitzgerald, and sort of picking and choosing from their vernacular when I approach songs. So yeah, I the more information the better. But he gives me a lot of nice character notes too, almost like the director, and you know, and I'm the ingenue in the musical.
Well, and that's, you know, when I was asking before, you know, what makes those old songs different? Many of them are character studies.
Totally.
Yes,
yeah.
And they were written for very specific scenes in a musical. They're trying to move a plot along.
Yes.
So there are these beautiful little snapshots into a scene. They have to say something complete, but also they have to do something very specific, which I think, you know, that is the one of the biggest differences with these songs, with the songs you're hearing today, is the purpose for what often they were used for.
And when you're singing with Villeray, is it different from how you're singing with Lake Street Dive?
Yeah, it's well, I mean, it's very different technically, and it is very different from sort of the emotional interpretation, because there's just with Lake Street Dive, I'm calling on like rock influences and soul, and there's some aspects that are just more sort of like pure raw, sort of just singing. Whereas I really do need to keep Villeray's lyrics right at the front. You know, that should be the first priority.
So you're a storyteller first.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Got it. Both of you sing on this record, but on the track called I'm Not Ready, you go back to an old trope which I have loved every time I've heard it, which is press the band into vocal duties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
yeah,
so
me
good.
Too.
I always love that. Or sliding so easily in where he used to be. But you best be gone when I put the coffee on. I'll scream it till I wake up that old neighbor up above. I'm not ready.
He's not ready
for love.
I, that more or less that song was born of the desire to do that. You know, it was really specifically coming from that scene in Casablanca where they sing Knock on Wood, where the whole, you know, the band plays this song Knock on Wood, which I've never heard in any other context. And because, you know, Rick's is the one bar in Casablanca, everybody's there every night. And so the band probably plays the same songs every night or plays, you know, every third night. And everybody knows their role.
Say, who's got trouble?
We got trouble.
How much trouble?
Too much trouble.
Well, now, don't you frown. Just knuckle down and knock on wood.
And there's just something so incredibly, it's just like everything about Casablanca is about, like, here are humans going through the worst parts of their lives. But in this place, you know, even if they're doing, you know, having to do horrible things in order to escape, they're also finding a lot of happiness in this bar. And I just always loved Knock on Wood, so I tried to write a Knock on Wood.
Well, it is, as I say, a kind of a long tradition. I mean, Pennsylvania Six, 5,000.
Yes, absolutely.
Sun Ra's Orchestra did a version of
Elephants on Parade.
Elephants on Parade, thank you, yes.
Come, look up, big elephants on parade. Here they come, they're pretty happy. They're here, they're there, big elephants everywhere. Look out, they're walking around the bed on the head.
There's something about the sound of a bunch of people who are not normally stuck in front of a microphone singing together that is deeply satisfying.
I totally agree. There's a lot of that actually also on a lot of salsa records from like the 50s.
Yeah. All right. Time for another song. Join Me in a Dream. There's a title that could have come from a Doris Day tune.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
This is another song from the new record called I Love a Love Song from Rachel and Villery, but here's a live performance.
Laughed the whole night through with you. Now join me in a dream. My weary eyelids won't stay open, but how I'll miss this view. So join me in a dream, and we'll live on inside our dreams. Picture a dance floor by the sea. For whom does the orchestra play? Just me patiently, awaiting your return to me. For feeling so tired, I ran from your side to join you in a dream. Awaiting your return to me. For feeling so tired, I ran from your side to join you in a dream.
That That is Rachel and Villery live with Join Me in a Dream. And Rachel, you were talking a little bit ago about how with Lake Street Dive you call on your rock and soul influences. But to pull this off, you had to have had this kind of sound in your mind's ear pretty early on. How did that happen for you?
I grew up in a household where jazz was played regularly, and my dad's dad, his favorite group was the Mills Brothers, and mm-hmm. so my dad always played us the Mills Brothers, and I don't know why I got into Ella Fitzgerald. I was 5 years old the first time I got a Ella Fitzgerald record, and and I think my dad just saw that I was. I don't know. I think he may have just observed my aura and said, "This little ham wants to sing jazz." And you know, Ella singing with Chick Webb, her voice has. It was very accessible for me when I was young. Maybe not five. I wasn't like, oh, I can sing just like 18-year-old Ella Fitzgerald.
A tisket, a tasket, a brown and yellow basket. I send a letter to my mummy on the way I dropped it.
She has such a young sounding voice, and I think that I really was like, oh, that's something I can aspire to, Ella singing, you know, Tisket a Tasket.
Yeah, there's a lot of innocence in her voice as opposed to a lot of jazz singers, you know what I mean, especially young. You
yeah,
know I mean?
Whose voices are very, very
yeah,
mature.
Billie Holiday, even young, you know, it's not as joyful and innocent. You can't hear the smiles.
Yeah, well. Exactly. Yeah. Little like young Ella, I mean, she sounded almost younger than she was, yeah. Even though she was absolutely incredible. Since she opened her mouth probably. But yeah, I got into it. And then I watched a lot of old movie musicals, like with Doris Day. And of course, Judy Garland is a huge inspiration to me as well. So yeah, I don't know. It just what I was into.
And Villery, on the record, I Love a Love Song, there are 12 tracks, 11 of them you wrote. The album ends, though, with something you did not write. And it kind of, if I were to ask you the question I just asked Rachel, I suspect the answer would lead us to this song.
Yeah. I mean, Goodnight, My Love is the last song that we sing together. It's something that I loved and I recognized from actually listening to WNYC as a teenager because Danny Stiles would play some version of Goodnight, My Love at the end of every broadcast. Mm-hmm. And it was often the Shirley Temple version, which I think Rachel relates to in a deeply positive way. And as a 16-year-old, I always kind of found treacly. But every once in a while, he would play the Ella Fitzgerald version. And it's just it's a mind-blowing song, and we would close a lot of shows with it, and we still close a lot of shows with it.
And, you know, Danny Stiles, as you say, used to end every episode of his show here at WNYC for decades. It was a weekly show.
Yeah, the Music Museum. I think it was every Saturday or something.
He would walk down the hallways here pushing a shopping cart with LPs in it. Yeah. That is literally how he delivered
Amazing.
The show.
Yeah.
A shopping cart down the hallway from his library into the studio, put the records on, do his thing, old-time radio DJ. You know, I mean,
I would not, I 1,000% would not be writing the songs that I write had I not been listening to that broadcast when I was like 16, 17 years old. I totally got into, you know, I was very into jazz, and I was into like kind of free stuff pretty quickly, and you know, avant-garde. But something about Danny Stiles, I discovered Fats Waller listening to Danny Stiles, and he played all these awesome like movie European movie things, and you know, just so good.
Yeah. Long time fixture here at WNYC. I Love a Love Song is the latest from Rachel and Villery. We'll wrap up with a little bit of Good Night, My Love. And Rachel, Villery, thank you so much for coming in and playing for us today.
It's been a pleasure.
Good night, my love. The tired old moon is descending. Sleep tight, my love.
We've got videos coming from these live performances that Rachel and Villery did for us. Watch the New Sounds YouTube channel for that. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our producer is Karen Havlick. Video editor is Eric Weber. I'm John Schaefer. Find all of our Soundcheck performances at newsounds.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Have promised to meet us tomorrow. Till then, my love, how weary.